Stay tuned for a message from Facebook after the show.
I think what makes the U.S. presidential election so unique is that it's, you know, the only office in the land by which we don't choose someone on the basis of who wins the most votes.
Polls just closed in 14 more states, including four key battleground states.
We have this kind of crazy, convoluted system known as the Electoral College, which tends to shine, you know, an incredible spotlight on anywhere from 6 to 10 states.
Still no winner in any of the 13 battleground states that will decide this election tonight.
The states that are the most competitive, the states that have the most boots on the ground from the two campaigns, the biggest field operations, the most money being dumped in. What you see playing out as a national election is really just a series of state-by-state contests.
I'm Jeremy Siegel. This is Politico Dispatch, and today we're bringing you part one of a special series looking at some of the most important swing states in the November election. Up first, Michigan, Georgia, Pennsylvania, and North Carolina.
When Donald J. Trump takes the oath of office on the west front of the U.S. Capitol on Friday, he will be there in no small part because of the votes of people in Michigan, a state that was supposed to be a lock for Hillary Clinton.
I'm Tim Alberta, the chief political correspondent for Politico, and I spent a lot of my time covering the presidential campaign on the ground in different parts of the country, but especially across the industrial Midwest. You know, Michigan really matters because of the broader realignment that has been occurring across the country over the course of several decades. And Michigan is, in many ways, sort of ground zero. You have a huge swath of these working class, sort of traditional Rust Belt union household voters.
We will stop the jobs from leaving your state.
That were, again, just the cornerstone of the Democratic coalition for generations, who are now, many of them, firmly ensconced in the Republican camp.
We will make Michigan into the manufacturing hub of the world once again, and no politician will do that. They don't have a clue.
And at the same time, you've got all of these voters who have been lifelong Republicans up until now, or up until 2016, who are suddenly beginning to vote Democratic and vote Democratic as a matter of routine. So, you know, I'm going to look at Oakland County, which is the second biggest voting prize in the state, the main suburb of Detroit, a pretty wealthy place, well-educated, overwhelmingly white, but becoming more and more diverse. You can't overstate just how important it is for Trump to prevent any real hemorrhaging among those wealthy, white, college-educated suburbanites who have soured on his party over the last 4 years.
I'm Alina Schneider, and I am a national political reporter at Politico. We should be watching Georgia during the 2020 election because for the first time since 1992, there's a real chance that it could go blue.
Georgia is absolutely a swing state. We had a record primary turnout of more than 1.2 million voters, including exceeding Republican turnout by 250,000 votes.
But that being said, it's still a real stretch. This is one of the biggest reaches for Democrats heading into this fall election, where they have hopes that they might be able to turn it to blue, in part because there's a lot of competitive Senate races, down ballot races on top of the presidential race. But it's still going to be really difficult for them to sort of put together all the puzzle pieces that would make that possible. So Georgia is still a very rural state with a lot of counties where rural voters are going to have their voices heard. And if they turn out in strong numbers, the way they did in 2018 for Republican Governor Brian Kemp.
Good morning, everyone. Let me thank you for being here with us today. Last night, as you all know, my opponent ended her campaign. The election is over, and I'm honored to be Georgia's governor-elect.
He was able to hold on and win there, in part because of his strength in the rural counties. If Trump is able to replicate that, that's how he's going to hold on in Georgia, is by really getting rural voters to show up for him. But within those rural voters, it's also important to note that it's not just code for just white rural voters. There's also a lot of Black rural voters in Georgia. And if Democrats are able to turn out those voters in a way that we haven't seen in a long time, that's a very exciting prospect for Democrats and a very worrisome problem for Republicans who are trying to hold on to this state.
Some big news here, Megan. Huge news, actually. The AP now projecting that Donald Trump has won the state of Pennsylvania.
That is the race, frankly.
So Pennsylvania was one of the three Rust Belt states that were really critical to President Trump's victory in 2016. He won Pennsylvania by less than one percentage point and actually was the first Republican presidential candidate to win the state since 1988. My name is Holly Otterbein, and I'm a reporter for Politico covering the 2020 race. So Joe Biden's message to voters in Pennsylvania has been coronavirus, coronavirus, coronavirus.
Mr. Trump, you want to talk about fear? Do you know what people are afraid of in America? They're afraid they're going to get COVID. They're afraid they're going to get sick and die.
I watch the ads that both him and Trump put out every week. And, you know, his have been mostly focused on Trump doing a poor job handling the coronavirus, he says, and, you know, him promising to do a better job. He's also criticized Trump on the economy as well. For Trump, the message has been a little bit all over the place.
Seattle's pledge to defund its police department by 50%, even including a proposal to remove 911 dispatchers from police control.
Joe Biden said he's absolutely on board with defunding the police. Listen closely.
Yes, absolutely.
Hello. You've reached 911.
He, you know, ran the defund the police ads. At the same time, and including in some of the same places, the same media markets, the Trump campaign ran ads criticizing Biden for backing tough on crime bills in the 1990s.
Mass incarceration has put hundreds of thousands behind bars for minor offenses. Joe Biden wrote those laws.
That was an attempt, really, I think, to bring down Biden's support among African American and Latino voters. So Biden has a lead, but it's not an overwhelming lead of about 4 percentage points in the state. Biden has been ahead in nearly every poll in Pennsylvania this year, but pretty much everyone that you talk to on both the Democratic and Republican side say that it's going to be a tight race, just like it was in 2016.
I'm Michael Cruz, a senior staff writer, and I live in Davidson, North Carolina. And I was told by a political scientist out at Western Carolina University, Chris Cooper, that this, North Carolina, is the swingiest of the swing states. I find myself thinking that there are plenty of people in Florida who would argue that and have some data to support it. But certainly North Carolina is pretty darn swingy. North Carolina is an important swing state for a couple reasons. One, if Donald Trump doesn't win here, he almost certainly can't win re-election. Two, it has a Senate race. Tom Tillis, the incumbent Republican.
I think I was elected to produce results.
And Cal Cunningham, the Democratic challenger.
I grew up in church and scouting and youth group, believing in public service, believing in serving people.
That could swing the balance of power in the Senate. In 2016, North Carolina voted for the president, voted for Donald Trump by 3.6 percentage points. At the same time, though, voted for Roy Cooper, a Democrat, for governor. The polls heading into this election season suggest another very, very close race at the presidential level, practically a dead heat between Trump and Biden. The battleground in North Carolina, the territory that is politically up for grabs, makes it a microcosm for many parts of the country. In that, it is the suburbs, and in particular, the close-in suburbs of Charlotte and Raleigh, that are going to be almost certainly decisive. In particular, white college-educated women who are unaffiliated. They are the voters that consultants and strategists from both parties think are going to be decisive in the presidential race, in the Senate race, and even in the gubernatorial race.
If you want to check out more of our coverage of the states that could decide who becomes the next president, check out the link in our show notes and stay tuned for part two of our series on the swing states. I'm Jeremy Siegel. Thanks for listening.
In preparation for the U.S. elections, we've taken critical steps at Facebook to secure our platforms and provide transparency. We've more than tripled our safety and security teams to 35,000 people, implemented five-step ad verification, and launched a new voting information center. Learn more at how we're preparing at fb.com/about/elections. That's fb.com/about/elections.